Real eyes, realize.
You are Locked On Fantasy Basketball, your daily podcast on fantasy basketball. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team, every day.
Hello, and welcome to the Locked On Fantasy Basketball Podcast, brought to you by Basketball Monster. My name is Josh Lloyd, and I am the fantasy analyst, the lead fantasy analyst, in fact, at basketballmonster.com. And you can find me on Twitter, as always, at redrock_Beeble. We are getting towards the end of the NBA season, just 2 weeks to go before the season is over. What we're going to do in today's show, we're going to recap the action from Wednesday. We're going to preview a five-game Thursday for DFS, and we're going to go to the Bay Area to shine the player spotlight on Kevon Looney of the Golden State Warriors. Michael Bolton, you know what to do.
Let's get to it.
Yeah, that's a real good idea. Let's go to the monstrous line of the night. Of course, it is Karl-Anthony Towns of the Minnesota Timberwolves. 56 points, 15 rebounds, 4 assists. He hit 6 triples. He had a block. He was 19 of 32 from the field. He was 12 of 15 from the line. And look, his performance probably could have been better if he's, if him and all these other big men in the NBA just stopped shooting threes and they got back to how things were good back in the old days when big men, you know, went to work in the basket, back to the basket, down in the paint, stopped shooting these threes. Couldn't roll my eyes hard enough when I hear that bullshit. Clearly, I'm saying that in jest. Townsie was clearly ridiculous in this game. It still took 41 minutes of him playing against the Atlanta Hawks for the Timberwolves to get over the line. Tom Thibodeau still is just really, really looking to grind his players into pixie dust. But this is awesome for us as fantasy owners until these players go down, of course. Townsie is not approaching... He's not approaching the number one player where a lot of people drafted him this season. He is the 8th ranked player so far this year. He's 5th over the last 2 months, averaging almost 24 and 12. A real uptick since Jim Butler has been gone, and that's obviously been one of the big issues for him this season, is seeing his usage drop and inexplicable lack of touches at times from that Tom Thibodeau coached offense. He has been really, really impressive, though, this season. Regardless, still a top 10 guy, as he was last year, and he's going to remain a top 10 player for the next 10 years, 7 years, maybe. Who knows? It's going to be a pretty long time unless an injury befalls him, which, of course, has never happened so far in his NBA career. But as I always like to say, someone is not injury-prone until they are. And when he does cop an injury, because he will, I can 100% assure you that he will cop an injury, then we'll start to have those worries. Oh, Thibs is running him into the ground and, all this built up minutes that he's been playing have impacted him. For now, it's fantastic. It's awesome. It's not always going to stay like that. I can 100% assure you he will not go through the rest of his NBA career without missing a game. It just will not happen. But at this point, he's obviously killing it, putting up good numbers, and it's going to be the same way. Maybe we get Butler back for the last couple of games of the year, but Towns is still going to be obviously a very impressive guy and a really key part to many fantasy championship winning teams. The problem is next week, the Wolves don't play a huge amount of games. In fact, they play Friday, they play Sunday, and then they don't play again until Thursday. So that's a real nightmare if for some godforsaken reason your league is still going on into next week. I'll still be here doing the podcast, but your league 100% should not be. The waiver wire line of the night is the plumber, J.R. Smith, 19-5-3 with a triple, with 3 steals. And in large part, he gets the line of the night because he went 8 of 9 from the field. Of course, we know there is no chance of that continuing to happen. He is outside the top 200 on the season. His minutes are down. His production is poor. And when Kyle Korver returns for the Cavs, he's not going to be seeing 31 minutes a night. So look at this and go, that's nice. Good on you, JR. It's just not going to happen. There's just very little that you can look at outside of a 18-team league, a 20-team league, or anything along those lines when you'd be looking at Smitty. But apart from that, and we just look at this as a fluke-ish shooting night, And that's really about it from Smitty. But he is your waiver wire line of the night. The young gun of the night goes to Marquise Chris of the Phoenix Suns, 12 and 13 with an assist, 4 steals and a block, 4 of 11 from the field and 4 of 4 from the free throw line. I've said so much about this guy all season, but he is putting it together at the right time of the year. He's the 65th ranked player over his last 4 games in 29 minutes per game, probably the most important stat there. 13.5 and 8, 1.5 steals, 1 block on 53% shooting with 0.8 threes. And these are the numbers that when we were looking at taking him with a late pick, and I couldn't have stressed enough how bad I thought he was as an NBA player, but how high his ability to rack up stats was, this is what we thought he could do. The problem is his inability to be an NBA player and stay on the court prevented him from getting anywhere close to this sort of playing time. And he has been 100% atrocious this season. But at this point of the year, don't hold the past 5.5 months against him. If you need someone on Friday, you probably won't need someone on Sunday, but if you need someone to help you in these categories, yeah, Chris is worth having a look at. Part of the problem here is the fact that they play on Friday and Sunday when there are those limited, or not, they're limited roster spots available for you guys. But you do have to have a look and see if he fits in to your situation or to your team's roster. That's all it's about at this time of the year is, how does this guy fit? How does it make sense in my lineup? Can I actually play him or not? And will it be beneficial to me? The dud of the night. I tell a man's not hot. Timmy Hardaway Jr., 9-3-2, 2 triples, 3 of 13 from the field and 1 of 2 from the free throw line. He has been one of the more infuriating players all season. He still is a top 90 player for the season, and he was drafted maybe in the 75th, 80 pick zone, so around that same sort of spot. Didn't break out as hard as he could have. Obviously dealt with that stress fracture in his leg. It hasn't quite been the same since returning, but he's had just moments of maddening shooting inconsistency, averaging 17.5, 4 and 2.5 for the season, giving you a steal, giving you almost 2.5 triples, and there's some decent numbers to work with there, but he's never going to be a top 40 or top 50 type of threat. He's probably going to be a top 100 guy for the next 2 seasons or so. He's not this good of a player where you think that he's going to be or have unfettered access to 34 minutes a night for the next 6 seasons. He's just going to have some real turds thrown in there. We said that at the start of the year where he strung together about 7 or 8 turds in a row, and in fact, just 3 games ago, he dropped in 39 points with 6 triples, and in fact has had 3 games of over 22 points in his last 7 outings. So there's been some good performances. It's just that today wasn't one of them because the shot didn't go in, and that's just going to continue to be the case for Tim Hardaway Jr. throughout his NBA career. Let's get into these games now and talk about the action that did occur across on Wednesday. That's it. The first game, the Brooklyn Nets, the Orlando Magic, D'Angelo Russell, 16-5-12, a steal, a block, 2 triples. He is looking much better at the moment, starting to look, you know, I'm a D'Angelo Russell fan, especially from his fantasy perspective. He does have some maddening defensive issues, but he is looking a lot better these days, starting at point guard. The numbers are starting to come together, and again, as a top 40 guy next year, there's a very big realistic possibility that it happens. Spencer Dinwiddie played 19 minutes. It was a sexy ride while it was happening. It's done. Drop him. It's an easy drop now for Dinwiddie. The minutes continue to trend down. Russell keeps playing well. And I don't know if this will be the case next year, but Jeremy Lin is also returning to this team. So minutes for Dinwiddie are going to be harder to find consistently. And I said this at the start of the season. It looked real stupid about 3 or 4 months, but I thought Spencer Dinwiddie had a lower ceiling than Caris LeVert, and LeVert would be the guy that I'd want to develop into that player. It seems that is the way that Kenny Atkinson's going just at this point. Doesn't mean that that's what he necessarily thinks overall, but LeVert is in a much better position than Dinwiddie at the moment. 16-3-6 for Caris here in 25 minutes, and he's still putting up numbers. I'm not sold on him as a must-own guy at this stage, but anyone who can come off the bench and score, hit some threes, get some assists, well, he deserves some attention. A nice game from Damari Carroll, 14-12, while Jarrett Allen, this is what I was hopeful for Allen, for him to get 28 minutes for a start, which he should be getting every single night, 15-8 with a steal and a block. He is Clint Capella light. Think about that for the 19-20 season, maybe even next year. No reason he can't be a 13-8 or 9 guy with 2 blocks on big field goal percentage. He can actually maybe hit 0.2, 0.3 triples and some decent free throws. I think he can do a lot of those things, although the free throws are a little bit of a concern, not quite as much as Capella. But he is an interesting guy moving forward. Well, Rondae Hollis-Jefferson, I think he's going to be a star next year. 14-9-4 with 2 steals. Shot horribly, but really good production and getting consistently big minutes. For the Magic, big men against the Nets. Nikola Vucevic, 24-15-5. It doesn't happen every time, but it happens enough for me to go, this is a legitimate pattern. It's not like a revenge game. It's not like a contract year phenomenon. This is actually a repeatable pattern that you can actually put some stock in. Mario Hezonja also had his second big game in a row, 23-7 with 2 triples. But when John Isaac, John Simmons, and Wes Wundu return, assuming that's pretty soon, then Hezonja's minutes are going to be squeezed. But we're not going to be seeing Terry Ross or Evan Fournier again for the rest of this season. Shelvin Mack and DJ Augustine kept it crushing as well. 13-4-6 for Mackie, while 14-1-3 for the DJ. I'd rather Augustine over Shelvin, but both of them have some short-term value. Well, Ken Burch showed enough to make you think, man, give him 20 minutes, then he could actually be a Kylo Quinn-based, styled 12-team streamer. Don't feel like we're getting to that stage, but it could. Rocket Rodney Purvis, just throw another Rocket moniker in there. He played 24 minutes, and he started at shooting guard. At least it wasn't Aaron Aflalo. He was not good. 0 of 6 from the field. 2 points, 3 rebounds, an assist, and a steal. But it's the right thing just to see what he can do, especially after I believe he was converted from a two-way to a full-time contract. So shout out to you, Rodney. As Gordon was good early and shit afterwards, 15-3-3. Let's go on to the next game, the Cleveland Cavaliers and the Charlotte Hornets. Just an absolute nonsense starting lineup. Larry Nance remained on the bench, even with Kevin Love out, so we could start the front court of Tristan Thompson and Jeff Green.
My name is Jeff.
Now, I gave Larry Drew a ton of shit when he was coaching in Milwaukee. He was really, really bad. And now he's back in charge of Cleveland, and that's really bad. Yes, the Cavs won, but Tristan Thompson shouldn't be starting over Larry Nance. Jeff Green shouldn't be pilfering minutes off players who are good. And Green has been much better this season, I'll grant him that, but that is a nonsense starting front court. LeBron, he was excellent.
LeBron James!
41-10-8. Well, Nance still did his stuff. 9 rebounds, 4 assists, and 4 steals and a block in under 20 minutes. But you have to think, without Kevin Love around, he's still only getting that amount of playing time. Of course, fouls continue to be a problem. He is not the must-own guy that he was before, but he can absolutely be owned if you just need those defensive numbers that he brings. That's something you need to pay attention to. Rodney Hood started over Jose Calderon. Rocket, 13-5 for him in 27 minutes for Rocket with 2 triples. Really a streamer and a points guy. That's it. He's more like your Tyler Johnson-type players, Duke Wayne Ellington, those sort of guys that you stream in for those categories. Jordy Clarkson was not good, and that's just fine because that's what he is. On to the Hornets, Dwighty Howard, 19-10 in 29 minutes, and this game, interestingly enough, no Cody Zeller, but Bill Hernangómez played 1 minute and 28 seconds. Just not into the game at all. The Cavs, you know, running smaller type lineups, but that was a little bit of a weird one. Nick Batum still on his minutes restriction, 6-2-5, so Jez Lamb had 11-3-2 in 25 minutes. I still wouldn't be bothering with Lamb in 12s, while Batum, we know that he's good, but it depends on your matchup. Do you desperately need production? Because if he's going to be on a minutes limit next game, then it's probably not going to be worth it. So that's got something you've got to pay attention to. Kemba Walker took the Charlotte Hornets record for all-time scoring. Now, I honestly don't understand how they do this, considering it is a completely different franchise, but apparently they've just taken all the records from the New Orleans Pelicans and now assume them into their own, which... It's weird. I guess it's very similar to the Baltimore Ravens, Cleveland Browns, record keeping stuff, but it's still a weird one to me considering Dale Curry played for the Pelicans franchise and not for this current iteration. He had 21-4. Very little else to really talk about with this Hornets team. The next game we take a look at, the New York Knicks and the Philadelphia 76ers. I went off on Jeff Hornacek the other day when Manuel Mudiay was ruled out along with Courtney Lee and they refused to start Frank Ntilikina. And some people pushed back at me and said, well, you know, Mudiay is out. They've got to run him as the backup point guard. And I said on this podcast, understandable, but there are easy ways around it. We've seen Portland do it with Dame Lillard and CJ McCollum and you bring one of them off and you run them as the backup point guard. But it was a legitimate excuse. Emmanuel Mudiay was back in this game and Courtney Lee was out, and we still did not get Frank Ntilikina starting. That is absolutely horrendous coaching. It is nonsense coaching. It is bullshit coaching. He is trying to get fired. And look, if he is trying to get fired so he can work himself for free next year or get money for doing nothing, maybe I respect that hustle. But it's bullshit coaching. He should never coach in the NBA again. And anyone who wants Mark Jackson for the Knicks, please don't. That is almost as bad as having Jeff Hornacek there. This is absolute nonsense. Ntilikina played 24 minutes. He had 3 and 6. He wasn't good. Who cares? You lost by 20 against the Sixers. Your team's not good. See what he can do. I'll tell you what, Lance Thomas isn't the future. Thomas is a serviceable ninth man, wing player, defender. I don't need to see him in the starting lineup over a guy who should be your point guard, but now you've decided he's a shooting guard, and now you decided he's coming off the bench. Just nonsense. Manny Mudiay was good, though, off the bench. 25 minutes, 22, 4 and 2, a steal and 2 blocks. Massive contribution right across the board. That's 2 big games from Mudiay coming off the bench behind Trey Burke. It's not something where I go, man, got to go and absolutely run and grab him, but it's something worth noting. And Trey Burke only played the 28 minutes. That is important to note. With Mudiay there, Burke's not getting the 40 minutes he got in that overtime game. He still shot well, 47%, 18.6 assists. And he's a guy you want to own. But in 28 minutes, he has less of an ability to bludgeon his way to value. If he has a shit night there, instead of being, you know, if he played 35 or 36 minutes and had a shit shooting night, he could still get you 13 points. In 28 minutes, maybe he gets you 8 points, and it's nowhere near as enticing. Enes Kanter dealt with a bruised back, still played 31 minutes, 17 and 14 with a block. Big chance that he does miss some time. He thinks it's not serious. And for everyone who calls him a soft cock, they probably need to check themselves before they wreck themselves. But there is a chance that he doesn't play. Of course, no cock in this one. That could mean we get big minutes from Lukey Cornett and Isaiah Hicks, which would be interesting. Mick Beasley, 22 and 8. He's making the case where you have to think that he's an ownable guy, especially if you need points. On to the Philadelphia 76ers. Joel Embiid copped a smack in the head from Markelle Fultz, suffered a facial contusion. They initially said that he wasn't concussed and wasn't in the concussion protocol. And they said, oh, maybe let's just give him another test tomorrow morning. So we'll wait and see, obviously, there. Rashawn Holmes is the guy that's going to be a productive player in his absence, especially if Amir Johnson remains out. But even if they both play, they'll split minutes. But Holmesy is by far the better fantasy performer there, and he might be someone you have a look at. He had 15 and 7 in this one, Rashawn, in his 22 minutes. So if Embiid misses, he'd be the guy to grab. Benny Simmons had 13, 8 and 10. Bob Cove had 17 and 4 with 3 steals. Really strong late season resurgence. Well, Dario Saric had been quiet recently, but he stepped up massively with Embiid out. 26, 14 and 5, 2 steals and 2 triples. Let's check in on Markelle Fultz. Only another 14 minutes, playing the backup role behind Ben Simmons exclusively. Only 3 points on 5 shots, that's terrible. But 5 rebounds, 7 assists, 1 steal, 1 block. Now, getting 15 assists in 28 minutes, which is what he's done through these 2 games, is a little on the high side. But the overall statistical profile, the rebounding, the assists, the steals, the blocks, this is why I was so super into him as the number one dynasty prospect in this draft. Who knows if the shot ever gets back to what it was at Washington. Some people have doubts. I'm not quite as skeptical there, but I still am worried about it. But these other numbers, this is why we're excited about him. He's not Malik Monk, who came in as being a guy that could score. He does all these other things. And that's why his fantasy potential is through the roof. Not this year, though. That's it for that game. Let's go on to the next one, the Portland Trail Blazers. The Memphis Grizzlies, just a harrowing, harrowing loss for the Blazers. Shabazz Napier got the start, and he was fairly poor. 8 points on 11 shots with 2 assists and a steal. And I got into an argument with someone on Twitter today. They probably listen to the show. In fact, I think they do listen to the show. I always get into arguments on Twitter, but this sort of thing bothers me. You know, I was really adamant on Napier as a DFS cash play. And if you presented me the same scenario again, he absolutely is a DFS cash play. It's a no-brainer decision. But it didn't work. But you know, people have this mentality of, you know, one game means everything. Napier is trash. Or he isn't. I know which one I'll go for. You can take one game and say he had 8 points on 11 shots, and that's shit. And I won't argue with you that that's shit. But I could also tell you he had 21, 5, and 3 with 2 steals and 3 triples against Russell Westbrook and the Oklahoma City Thunder. So therefore, he's probably the MVP. Is that how that works? Judging shit off one game is nonsense. And I know I've said that word a lot. Lillard is likely back next game, though, so Napier's value is going to take a tumble. Evan Turner got those minutes with Mo Harkless out. He couldn't shoot at all. Didn't get any assists, which is somewhat of a surprise, but he can have some borderline value. Well, here we go. The Chief, Al-Farouq Aminu.
Sometimes it may be good, sometimes it may be shit.
He was making me reassess the drop because he'd been good, but no, here we go. He was shit. 5-6 with a steal, 2-9 from the field. This is just what this guy does. He is as inconsistent as anybody and can go, you know, disappear for big stretches of time and put up monster top 30 type performances for stretches. Nurkic continues his strong run, 12-8, but 3 steals and 3 blocks, while McCollum had 42 points on 25 shot attempts. Always love it when someone has a go at him. Man, you got to learn to hit your free throws. As someone had a go at him on, I think it was on Instagram today. Just, what are you doing? If you're having a go at NBA players on Twitter, getting into their comments and telling you, oh, should he hit that shot? Come on. Let's just reassess a bit. Wade Baldwin IV. I had an argumentative day on Twitter today, actually. I said that the decision making of Memphis to cut Wade Baldwin was ridiculous. Someone told me it wasn't. I disagreed. Now, Baldwin came in here. He played 21 minutes. He had 15, 4, and 2. He is not an 83% shooter. I'm well aware of that. He has attitudinal issues. He was unproductive many, many times last season for Memphis, and he's been toiling away in the G League for Portland, also dealing with some thumb issues this year. My issue with them cutting him was, you've got to pay out 3 years of his rookie contract for a start. You're a team that's not really going anywhere necessarily. You just spent a first-round pick on him 1 year ago, and he didn't get a huge amount of playing time. Why not see if he can actually develop into someone by the age of 23 or 24? He still could. He probably won't, but he still could. When you're holding Mario Chalmers, non-guaranteed contract for a 31-year-old subpar NBA player before an Achilles tear, ridiculous decision-making processes. Baldwin was great here, but he's just going to be nothing for the rest of the year now. Pat Connaughton with 2 blocks as well. Shout out to you, Patty. On to the Grizzlies. Speaking of random performances, Marshawn Brooks. Remember that bloke? Used to play for Boston and Brooklyn. Had some pretty good games for Brooklyn back in the day. 21 points in 21 minutes, fresh off a trip to China. 5 triples, 2 assists, 1 steal, 1 block. Sky high usage, highest on the team, 21 minutes. But this was without Tyreek and it was without Andy Harrison. We've seen Brooks do this before. If you don't believe me, you can go look through his past game logs, especially during his time in Brooklyn. And you can see, you know, that he did have some of these scoring nights, but he's a guy that's never really been able to stick on a team and put up consistent numbers. And there's a reason for that. He's been out of the NBA for, this is, I think, for his last year was the 2013-14 season. So we're talking quite a while ago that he was actually ever relevant. But even back then, he played a little stretch for the Lakers in February 2014 where he scored 14, 7, 11, 14, 23 points in a 5-game stretch. So he can do this at times. And if Harrison and Evans remain out, deeper leagues, you might want to take a look at the other Brooksy. Speaking of Brookses, Dylan Brooks had 18-6 with 2 steals in 30 minutes. A nice performance from Brooks. He actually provided something apart from points. Still don't really love that. And the Grizzlies, they tanked their asses off in this one again. Don't ever tell me the coaches aren't trying to lose games, because Marc Gasol, in a close game against Portland, played 21 minutes. 8-3-6 with Gasol, 2 steals. But the fact that you're playing the guy that not only is the best player on this team, but is the best player even if you combine the added abilities of the other 15 guys on the healthy roster, however many there are, he is better than them combined. That is coaching to lose, and there is absolutely no way around that. You can't argue it either way. Wayne Seldon had 10 points in 23 minutes with 2 assists and a steal. I believe I said this the other day, that he's a guy that can put together these nice games, but I just don't trust it on a long-term consistent basis. This is why Jamichael Green had 6-8, while Jarrell Martin had 7-14, and they are really your 14-16 team league guys. I feel like I'm rambling a bit today. Apologies for that. The Atlanta Hawks and the Minnesota Timberwolves. The Moose, Mike Muscala, 24 points with 4 triples and a steal, and I've said he's been playing well and consistently. I didn't expect this from him, but he is a top 110 sort of guy. If you want blocks, field goal percentage, some threes and some scoring, he actually can have use. I don't see his role going anywhere or changing. Or in fact, if it does change, it will only go up. Taurean Prince, the artist formerly known as 21-4-7, now deciding, man, I can do everything. I'm just going to add assists into my game. His elevation to number one scoring option and now facilitator has been really impressive. I think it does really shit the bed a little bit next season to begin the year. I think that we might find him being an overdrafted guy. But so much of, I'll talk about that in a sec, so much of overdrafting is dependent on a lot of factors, which we'll talk about in a sec. But he's been really good here, obviously. And as long as Dennis Schroeder is there, which I would imagine he misses a couple more here at least, guessing. Isaiah Taylor, 20 points, 2 rebounds, 8 assists and 2 steals. I love what Taylor's providing. I hated that Houston waived him so they could keep Chris Paul's mate Bobby Brown, who they ended up waiving anyway. It would have been really good to see Isaiah Taylor play on that Houston team as their third point guard. I think he's a solid player. A really, you know, a second string point guard on a team that's seeded between, you know, the 10th and 20th best record. I think he can be that guy. Like, I think he's a guy that's probably a better player than Jerron Grant at this point. He can block some shots, he can score. I'm liking what I'm seeing. Damo Lee had 8, 4, and 5 with 3 steals and a block. Another big 30-minute game for him, even though he had to leave the court to get his fingers retaped. Came back, played those big minutes. It looks like he's going to have a pretty solid role down the stretch here, and you can use him in your mid-size to deeper formats. Well, the Undertaker had a double-double, and the Baptist had 10 and 5, but also added in the triple one just to keep his value afloat there. Both of those guys are 12-team guys. On to the Timberwolves. Nemanja Bjelica saw his minutes go back up. 37 of them, 14, 6, and 3 with 2 triples. That's nice, but he is a little bit up and down with the production. He is a borderline guy, and as I said, with that weird Timberwolves schedule, Friday, Sunday, and then nothing till Thursday, not the highest priority player. Jeff Teague.
My name is Jeff.
Only 30 minutes for Teague because he had foul trouble. 11 points, 8 assists, and 2 steals. Still pretty okay. Well, Wigo had 17, 2, and 3, and 2 steals there. Also, it was not a good Taj Gibson night. Only the 7 and 7 for Big Taji. The Boston Celtics and the Utah Jazz honestly stunned that Boston won this game. It's just an absolutely stunning performance. No Kyrie, no Marcus Smart, no Gordon Hayward, no Al Horford, no Marcus Morris. And they still get this win. It's crazy. And they were down so much late. And then Jaylen Brown hits a game-winning 3. 21-5-3 for Jaylen with 3 triples and 2 steals. While Jace Tatum, 16 points, 2 rebounds, 3 assists. And the Richie Beno.
2 for 2, 2, 2.
Actually, I should have a look to see how many people have had Richie Benos this season. I'll do that and I'll get back to you at some point. Probably not on today's podcast. Shane O'Larkin, 34 minutes for Shane O. 10-9-4 with 2 triples. He can do these things, get you assists, get you steals. We spotlighted him a couple of days ago. I think he was helped by Morris's absence here, which pushed Tatum and Brown up positions, forcing him into that backcourt rotation, and his minutes will likely reduce when they return. Tez Rozier had 13-7-3 with 3 triples and shot the ball poorly. This has always been the big issue with him, which looked like it had been corrected this year, but the last 2 games haven't been ideal with that shooting percentage. Well, Bainesy. Give Bainesy minutes, he will produce 13-6 with 28 minutes. Back to Pistons days, Spurs days, I say it all the time. The Dancing Bear started, Gershon Yabesele, 3 points in his 15 minutes and nothing to really get overly excited about there. On to the Jazz, ravishing Rick Rubio, 14-8-10 with 3 steals. Shot horribly, but you're well aware of that. While Gobert had 10-11. Derek Favors, only 24 minutes, 8-5. The Celtics went small. His last 2 games have been poor. You're better off using his spot as a streaming spot. Well, Dante Exum was really impressive when he was on the court. Only saw 9 minutes, but I've been super impressed with what he's been able to do since returning from the shoulder injury. The Don, really inefficient for Donovan Mitchell. 22 points in 40 minutes, 20 shots, 35%. It's a real field goal percentage killer, as he was for the first 6 weeks to 2 months of the season. You still take what he's doing, clearly, but the production has dipped a little bit from overall fantasy value. The Clippers and the Suns. My man Ty, the list manager Wallace, was back. 34 minutes starting, 12-7, 3 steals and a block for the list manager. When the Rooster returns, there's a chance it impacts Ty. I think Milos Teodosic will miss a couple. But I could also see Gallinari just taking all of Wes Johnson's minutes and him and Sam Decker being out of the rotation. Even the 16 minutes that CJ Williams gets or the 22 that Sindarius Thornwell get should all be disappearing before Wallace gets touched too much. So he could be a really interesting defensive steals streaming type of player. Jordan had 13-15 while Toby Harris continues his ascension into elite territory? Probably not, but he's pretty bloody good. 27-2-3 with 5 triples, while Austin Rivers had 18-2-8. Lou Williams was not good. 13-2-3. On to the Suns. Talked about Chris already. Joshy Jackson, 18, 3 and 5, 2 steals and 2 blocks. As long as these guys are out, we had no Booker, Warren, Alfred Payton or Alex Len in this one. Jackson is going to thrive. He is a must-own guy until further notice. While Shaqy Harrison, with all those injuries, he had 17 and 4 in 31 minutes, 2 assists and 4 steals. One of the best steals stream guys out there, but it's so hard to get a full read on everything this Suns team is doing with everyone out at the moment. Troy Daniels did what he does, probably the best 3-point streamer available, 4 triples in 32 minutes, while Tyler Ulis took the starting point guard job with Payton sitting. He had 23, 3 and 2, 56% shooting. Clearly, that's an anomaly. He won't be shooting at that level. This is eerily reminiscent of what he did at the end of last year when everyone was out and he just took every shot in the world and they went in big minutes. But when Payton and Booker come back, he's not going to have any chance, I don't think, of being an ownable player. The last game of the night, the Dallas Mavericks and the Los Angeles Lakers, another team really, really trying to lose this one, the Mavericks. So basically no player played over 26 minutes, and that player was Maxi Kleber. They did get the services of Dwight Powell, Dorian Finney-Smith, and Nerlens Noel all back. They played 20, 21, and 20 minutes each. Noel will probably be out in the next game as this Salah Mejri Nerlens Noel rest bullshit continues. Dennis Smith, only the 22 minutes, still strong, 14 with 8 assists and 4 triples, but yeah, this sort of splitting of minutes right across the board, it's nonsense. Again, you can say whatever you want about the process, this is not what the process was at all. Look, not at all. This is coaching to lose, and Brett Brown never did that. This is clear coaching to lose, and I like Rick Carlisle. I think he's a really, really good coach. This is bullshit. The Lakers. Lonzo Ball, 24 minutes, 8, 4, and 5, and copped a knee in the knee and wasn't able to return to the game. It is the same knee that he had that issue on in January, but he says it's not the same spot. He is having an MRI that's precautionary, so we'll obviously stay tuned to that. Doesn't appear too serious. Brandon Ingram returned from his injury, 13, 6, and 4 in 23 minutes. Thankfully, he only played 23 minutes because the last time he returned from an injury and was on a minutes limit, he played 44 minutes in that game. Wasn't the case here. The future MVP, Kyle Kuzma, had 18, 4, and 3, while Julius Randle, 20 and 10, and Brooklyn's Brook Lopez had 22 and 7 with 2 triples, a steal, and a block. Continues to have a really excellent second half of the season. Alex Caruso, 16 minutes for him, 5 points with 3 assists, really just deep league stuff, but it is worth paying some attention to him now that he's able to play for this team more as the G League regular season is now done. All right. Let's go player spotlighting now. We're going to go to Golden State, and we're going to talk about a guy that I've been talking about him quite a bit on the podcast lately, and that's Kevon Looney. Of the Warriors. Looney is a guy that the Warriors declined his rookie option for his fourth season, so he's an unrestricted free agent. They're not going to be able to retain him, I don't think. They can only offer him up to what he would have gotten as the fourth year of that rookie deal. Other teams can offer him whatever they want. But recently, unbelievably impressive. In under 24 minutes per game over the last 2 weeks, Looney's the 59th ranked player in the NBA in fantasy. 8 points per game, 5.5 rebounds, but 1.7 steals, 2.3 blocks, and 55% from the field. They are all super big positives. Yeah, bad free throw shooter. Really bad. Limited attempts. Not a big scorer. Not getting you assists. Actually hitting a little bit of his threes. 33% of them, 0.2 triples in the 6 games. That's only a couple, but yeah, it's starting to develop something. Been impressed with him. Now, over the first 2 seasons, not impressed at all. But there's a couple of things we need to remember about Looney. Now, if I go back, and I haven't done this, but if I go back and listen to my draft podcasts back from the 2015 NBA draft, or any, I think I might have written an article, I don't remember. But when he fell to 30 for the Warriors, my reaction was, oh, Jesus, of course the Warriors get a good player. Of course they do. Of course he falls all this way and the Warriors get him. I was into him. I thought he was a top 20 guy. Of course, the Warriors get this guy. He's going to be good in 4 years. He's going to really be an interesting player for them in that time. Of course, they get this guy. And then he was shit. But his first season, he played 5 games because of hip problems. He carried those hip issues into last season where he played only 53 games. You know, I've talked about hip problems a lot, and they're a real bastard for your entire body. So how much of an impact did that play? You have to think it played a pretty significant role. He's only played, prior to this season, 467 minutes in the NBA. This year, he has played more minutes than he had in those previous two seasons combined. So a much bigger sample size this year than what we'd seen for the previous 2 years in his career. And how does it all look advanced-wise? Well, his first year, in his 21 minutes, the team was 55 points better off with him on the bench. So there's small sample size there. But last year, still a negative, 3.7, but this year, a plus 0.9. So the team has been marginally positive with him on the bench, which is no small feat considering the players who play ahead of him. Draymond Green, Kevin Durant, Curry, Thompson, all these sort of guys. He's not necessarily sharing time with these guys a huge amount. Obviously more this year because of the injuries that the Warriors have suffered. He's got a PER that's marginally below league average. His true shooting is above league average. His win shares per 48 have always been strong, and they're strong again this year. His defensive box score plus minus, his overall box score plus minus, these are all big positives. His defensive box score plus minus is 2.0 this year. Yeah, that's a pretty good number in 750 minutes. The thing I really want to look at is his block percentage, which is well up this year. For a big, he's at 3%, which is in the 86th percentile in the NBA. So that's not 86th percentile of all players. This is per cleaning the glass. This is, of big men, he is in an elite area for shot blocking. And for steals, at 1.7% steal rate, he's in the 86th percentile there as well. Getting steals and blocks from your big man, it's a rarity in fantasy. That's what makes Nerlens Noel this excellent option when he plays. It's what gives Jonathan Isaac owners hope. It's what makes Andre Drummond's value look much better than what you might think on the surface. Looney's ability to get those numbers, or get those defensive stats, is very, very interesting. He is averaging per 36, 1.4 steals and 2.1 blocks this year. And over the past 2 months, he's at 2 and 2.3. Really impressive stuff. 57% field goals. Yeah, he's only averaging 3.6 points and 3 rebounds, but in a 28-minute role, he could be an 11 and 8 guy, 1.3 steals, 2 blocks. Does he ever get a 28-minute role on this team? No, but he can go anywhere. Could he be better than Jermichael Green? I know I bring up Memphis for him all the time. Of course he could. Very, very easily. How would he fit alongside Kristaps Porzingis in New York? It's an interesting one. He's worked himself into being a guy that probably wasn't going to be in the NBA next season, to if he's not in the NBA next season, I'll be shocked. Throw that in along with Mario Hezonja, who's in the same boat as him. I'm really interested in him. So if your dynasty league is over, it's coming to a close, and you're in a really deep situation, and Looney's around, I think that there is this window of opportunity opening up for him for next season, and these advanced markers are giving me good signs. By the way, per 36 fantasy value over the last month, he's the 66th ranked player. Over the last 2 weeks, 24th, averaging 12 and 8 with big blocks, big steals, big percentages, or big field goal percentage. He's definitely a name to watch, and I have changed thoughts on him. He was atrocious, but the hips, I think, played a large factor in that, and he looks much, much better this season. And he's going to be one to track for sure, and I'll be really interested to see how it all pans out for Kevon Looney. Let's talk some DFS now. The perfect lineup on FanDuel. Manny Moutier, 35.8, and Isaiah Taylor, 35.4. The plumber, J.R. Smith, had 37.5, while C.J. McCollum had 54.1. LeBron James had 64, Hezonja, 37.9, Dario Saric had 54.3, Marquise Chris, 38.1, and Townsie had 81 for a total of 438.1, and that cost $59,500 on DraftKings. Look at these names. Shaq Harrison, 33. The Plumber, 35.75. This is why playing DFS at this time of the year, not your best option. LeBron, 69. Marquise Chris, 37.75. Karl Anthony Towns, 86.25. CJ McCollum, 55.75. Dario Saric, 56.5. And Isaiah Taylor, 36. That's a total of 410, and that cost $49,800 dues. Couple of things I do want to touch on before we start talking DFS. Good luck to your baseball team. I believe it's opening day tomorrow. I'm going to start to try and watch a bit more baseball this year. My team is the Giants, and a bit of a soft spot for the Cubs as well, and the Blue Jays. I'm not really committed to any one team necessarily, but they're the sort of three teams that I pay attention to. So hopefully your teams go all right. I think I've only got one real good team in that bunch there with the Cubs. But another thing I do want to touch on, it was a thread today on Reddit, and I've seen a few of these pop up about do not draft lists. And today's one was, you know, which players are must-haves for fantasy for next year? And people, you know, offering all, you're chiming all this stuff in. And part of the reason why I think that people who listen to this podcast or people that subscribe to Basketball Monster are successful at fantasy basketball is because they understand the things that are commonly held by the general public and understand why they're wrong. There's no such thing as a must-have player, especially in March. Yeah, on the fly, you can see me on the screen here bringing up my phone to have a look at some of the players that they mentioned in this thread. Donovan Mitchell, Miles Turner, Steven Adams, Rondé Hollis-Jefferson, Jason Tatum. Well, these are names. These are must-have players next year. Sure, if Steven Adams has got an ADP of 40, then he's a guy that you don't want to, anything to do with. There's just no such thing as a must-have player, especially when you have, A, no idea how free agency, drafts, trades are going to go down. You have no idea how injury returns are going to happen. Like, only draft is never drafting Conley again. Cool. He's there at pick 90. You'll leave him alone? No, you won't. Like, having these sort of thought processes of these are guys that we must have at this time of year is 100% wrong. And someone who's listened to this podcast, and he's probably listening to this now, said, oh, Josh, you should do a podcast on this now. Who are the must-haves for next year? And I will never do that. No, not insulting you, Mr. whatever your name is, if I could find your name, Ashy Larry. Not gonna do it because there's no such thing. Must-haves don't exist. So if you see these articles, this is my top 10 for next year, these are the players you must have, they're bullshit. 100% bullshit, because everything changes so much. And people will ask me, I wouldn't never throw this stuff out there. You need to run the numbers and see how it all works out and see where you get the value. A guy like Joe Ingles was great value because you could have got him a pick 130. A guy like Torian Prince, the same. So many of these, you know, Joshie Richardson, a pick like your last pick. They're the guys that become, these are the players I want to own. Because I know that I'm, you know, Gaz Harris at like 90, the Blue Arrow at 150 in ADP, and then that started to change, of course. But they're the guys that you need to look at and, you know, understanding this difference and not focusing in on, I am never drafting this guy or I am always drafting this guy, because you're going to lose. I know that's not DFS, but I need to get that off my chest. Washington and Detroit on FanDuel. The news is that Johnny Wall is questionable. He might return, and FanDuel, now I have absolutely no idea why they do this, but he's a minimum salary player. Just keep him at 7,000. If John Wall plays, I don't care if he's on a 20-minute limit, at 3,500, he's a must-play player. It's as simple as that. If he doesn't play, then he's not. But it's the first game of the night. We will get word of it beforehand. And that's a no-brainer cash play at 3,500. As simple as it gets. I have no idea. Now, I think on Moneyball they did the same, but on DraftKings it didn't. But that is a nonsense price, and it's one that should be 90% owned in cash. If he plays. Reggie Jackson, 5,300. The 28 minutes was the most encouraging thing last game. He had 30 points, so that's a good sign. I'm happy with him at 5,300. Really, really okay with going there. Well, Ish Smith, of course, we can fade that. And Satoransky at 57. If Wall is in, I'm out on Satoransky. If Wall is out, I'm in on Satoransky. Pretty simple equation. Brad Beal at 7,800 has been nowhere near that recently with a 27 average over his last five. I could see that as a tournament play, but only if Wall was out. While Lukey Kennard at 4,200 hated the fact that he only got 19 minutes last game, but he has got clear 30-point upside, 35-point upside, a GPP target for sure. Small forward Bullock and Otto Porter. Reggie Bullock, I think he's got limited cash upside. Sorry, limited tournament upside, but fairly solid cash floor given how well he shoots every single game. While Porter at 7,200 is not a bad cash play as well. They're not the best ones out there, but they're definitely guys that you can use. Kelly Oubre is only a tournament guy for his inconsistency. Markieff Morris at 56. If Wall plays, I'm sour on it. If Wall is out, at 56, I really do like that for Markieff, while Blakey Griffin is at 8,500. Yeah, he's been good, but the last couple have been a bit down, and I just think that that's probably just a little bit too high at this stage for Griffo. Tone Tolliver's been playing fairly well himself. He's at 4,400. I think that might be just a smidge too high. And at centre, Drummo is at 9,400 for Drummo. I'm in on that. I think that's a good cash play. I think that's a nice high price guy. Let's get my 45s, probably 50s, and feel pretty good about it. Well, Gortat and Mahinmi, I feel the opposite of good about those guys going into a DFS contest. On DraftKings tournaments, Markieff at 57s there as well. See, John Wall comes in at 7,100. Completely reasonable. You have nothing to do with it, but it's reasonable. 3,500 is a weird one for Fangio. Drummo's at 94, Beal's at 74, and Reggie Jackson at 48, and I think all of those guys can be cash usable. Beal a little bit more dependent on Wall's availability, though. Let's go on to the next game. We've got the Chicago Bulls, this should be good, and the Miami Heat. The Heat are favored by 13. The total is 210.5. No Chris Dunn, no Zachy LaVine. Lowry Markkanen is probable. Denzel the Hammer Valentine is probable. Chris Felizio is doubtful, while Hassan Whiteside has been upgraded to questionable for the Miami Heat, which puts a real dampener on Kelly Olynyk and Jim Johnson. Bam Adebayo is out. At point guard, the Iron Shoulder Goran Dragic has been underwhelming recently, but this is a perfect opportunity for him to drop a 40 because it's the Bulls. Tyler Johnson's at 4,700, really only GPPs, but weird players go off against the Bulls, and Johnson could be classified as that. Campaign's at 5,000, a little bit disappointing recently, but still he's averaging 25 over the last five. At 5,000, you get me 25, I'm all right with it. No Chris Dunn, I think he's totally fine to use here with some upside. Jaren Grant, not interested there. Shooting guards, the sexy boy Sean Kilpatrick, minimum salary, knows how to jack shots. There's no doubt about that. At a minimum salary look, he is a tournament guy that maybe, but actually, let's give him one of these. But yeah, not for cash. The Duke, Wayne Ellington's at 4,200. Yeah, not really. Justin Holiday's at 3,600. One of the more egregious chuckers in the NBA, but sometimes they go in. So that means if you're constructing multiple tournaments, having him in one of them with literally the ability to go for 40 could be a real game changer. At small forward, David Nwaba, I have no interest in that. While Joshy Richardson's at 6,200. Someone, I think Gary Washburn it was today from the Boston Globe, was like redrafting the 2015 draft. It's an interesting exercise. I should do it at some point on the podcast. He said he'd have Towns at one. He'd have Booker at two. Porzingis at three. I feel like I'm going to miss someone here. I think he had D'Angelo Russell at four, Joshy Richardson at five, and Terry Rozier at six. I think there's someone I'm missing in there. Regardless, just say that's what it is. And you look at it and you go, I can't make too many arguments about that. It's amazing to see Josh Richardson there at five, and you could make the easy argument that he could be ahead of D'Angelo Russell. Now, I like Russell, but Richardson's been fantastic this season. The replies to Washburn, of course, Rozier clearly above Richardson. Richardson, what are you talking about? They obviously don't watch the Heat, and they don't realize how good Josh Richardson is, but it's an interesting exercise. Go through and have a look at that 2015 draft and see how high Josh Richardson would actually go in that, because top five is definitely not a stretch. Anyway, I like him here. Great, great matchup for him. The price is a little bit elevated, but I still think he can exceed that pretty comfortably. The Hammer's at 5,300. Denzel Valentine, he can fill it up in multiple areas. I actually like using him quite a bit here. Justice Winslow, I don't. At power forward, Punchbob Shiploke, 6,300 for Portis. He's just really been nowhere near that. But with Felizio in doubt, I think that Portis is in his element here. Can really go out and just jack shots to his complete and utter amusement. Fine. I wouldn't feel good in cash, though. Noah Vonleh gets a bump as well. He's at 4,600. He's more cash than tournament with a solid sort of 24-point base with his ability to rebound. Jim Johnson's at 6,800. Whiteside out, then you consider him. Whiteside in, I think it's hard to. Well, Lowry Markkanen at 55. I'm all about Markkanen at 55. That's a pretty low price, assuming he plays. Well, Olynyk at 7,800. That is just the fate of a century. No way. Whiteside at 7,500. First game back, I want nothing to do with it at that sort of a salary. Well, Robin Lopez at minimum salary. Yeah, nah. All right, let's go DraftKings now. I like Lowry at 54 for tournaments, Lowry Markkanen, and then the Iron Shoulder, Punch Bob, and Joshy Richardson are all pretty strong cash plays. Most of the other things apply that I said on DraftKings as well. Let's go now on to the next one. We're talking Who are we talking? Thunder and Spurs. No Kawhi. LaMarcus Aldridge is questionable, so that's good news for Spurs fans. At point guard, DeJounte Murray is at 5,700. He's going to be going up against probably the only other point guard in the NBA that's as good a rebounder as what he is. I think 57 might be just a little bit too high for DeJounte, so I'm not super keen there, while Pat Mills is only ever a tournament player. I love Russ. 11,200 for Russ. I think you can pencil in 55 almost straight away, and then you get some upside on top of that as well. So I really, really like Westbrook for both formats. Shooting guard Dan Green is at 5,200. In no world am I spending 5,200 on Danny Green unless transition defense automatically becomes a fantasy stat category. Alex Abrines, Terrence Ferguson, just a bunch of shit at shooting guard, really. No offense to those blokes. Paulie George, 7,700. Hasn't quite been at the right level, but I think he's worth going at here. So I'm in on George for cash and tournaments. While Corey Brewer, the sparkle is fading. He's averaging only 18 over the last three, 4,400 for a guy that is now showing what he has been for the last four or five seasons, as opposed to that 10-game run. Harder to lock that in cash. I don't like Kyle Anderson or Rudy Gay too much here either. At power forward, Mallow's at 5,300. Yes, he has been bad, and he has been very bad for a lot of this season. But I do like the upside here for Mallow, only for tournaments, of course, not for cash. While Aldridge at 8,900, bung knee, high price, recipe for DFS disaster. At center, Steve-O Adams, 6,900 for Adams. The problem is that just how limited big men are against the Spurs. Adams himself has been a victim of that at times. I don't really feel super interested outside of a tournament, while Powell at 46 would get an immaculate boost if Aldridge is out, and you would be really interested in him in cash in that sort of a scenario. You might consider Davis Bertans or Joffrey Laverne, but not too strongly, I wouldn't have thought. On DraftKings, Westbrook at 11.4 is the guy that the main focus here. Not much else that really stands out as excellent. Powell at 5,400 is just way too high, and even if Aldridge is out, that's becomes a little bit riskier than what we would have hoped for. Anyway, let's go on to the next game. We've got the Indiana Pacers and the Sacramento Kings. The Pacers are favored by 7.5, and the total is 203. Garrett Temple has a sprained left ankle. Trevor Booker has a sprained right ankle. Zach Randolph is listed as sick of this shit. He's not, but I am. He is ill, apparently. If he is out, then we're looking at more minutes for Scal Labissiere. If Temple is out, then maybe it's Bruno. Maybe it's Justin Jackson getting extra playing time. Whatever it is, expect bullshit with this Kings team. At point guard, Frank Mason III is averaging 25 points over his last five. He is outplaying De'Aaron Fox from a fantasy per minute point of view pretty comfortably. Fox is averaging under 27 points per 36 minutes. Mason's averaging 38. And the minutes have been swinging towards Frankie himself. He's averaging 26 over the last three games, and Foxy's averaging 24. I don't think he's got massive, massive upside there, Frank Mason. But at 4,000, with the way that things are going, the way he's playing, the way the minutes are going, I feel good in him getting 20. Fine, let's go. Daz Collison at 6,000. Good matchup against his former team. He averages 8 against them. Not ideal. But I think he's worth looking at as a tournament guy, but not much apart from that. Corey Joseph and De'Aaron Fox may be in a tournament if he turns it around, but I have little faith in him at this point. Oladipo's at 8,800. Really good matchup for Depot. Definitely happy to use him in a cash lineup, while Bogdan's at 43. I think that's a fade situation. While Budrick Hield at 6,200. Sorry, bud. That is just too high. At small forward, we've got Lance, we've got Bojan Bogdanović at 4,900. I'd be more inclined to throw Bojan in a GPP than I would for Bogdan. While Stevenson, no thanks. Justin Jackson at 4,000. Even if Temple is out, I just don't see the upside value there of Justin Jackson. At power forward, Labissiere's at 55. Randolph's out. I'm in on Labissiere. Randolph's in, and Skull will get dicked because, got to develop the 38-year-old man who can't jump. Skull at 5,500, really good value again, if Zedbo is out. Domantas Sabonis is back, but if Trevor Booker is out, maybe, but even then, probably not. While Thaddeus Young is at 6,200, been giving you 30 almost every night, and if Booker is out, I'm okay with using Young. If Booker is in, I think that might be a stay-away type spot. At center, Will Cauley-Stein, 6,500. tournaments only because the minutes are uncertain. Costa Kufos at 3,900. He dropped 23 points last game in 14 minutes and then didn't see the court in the second half. He would have been well on the way to smashing through that. And if Randolph is out, I could understand throwing Kufos into a GPP situation, while Miles Turner has been bad. Definitely been bad. Under 20 over the last three. But he had a strong string of games before that. And this is a matchup where many, many centers can go off. So it's 6,600. The ownership will be low for Miles Turner. I think he is a GPP guy. That is the sort of thing that you're looking for in those scenarios. Over on DraftKings, for tournaments, Hield and Bojan Bogdanovic are your GPP guys, whereas for cash, Frankie Mason again, Labissiere at 52, I even feel okay with going with him even if Zedbo plays, while Miles Turner and Victor Oladipo. Turner's at 5,800, that is real tough to go past, even for cash and even with his struggles, that matchup would swing me onto him. The last game of the night, the Milwaukee Bucks and the Golden State Warriors. Kevin Durant and Draymond Green are both probable. Thon McCur is doubtful, while Omri Caspi, Klay Thompson, and Steph Curry. Actually, let's try again. Omri Caspi is questionable. Steph Curry and Klay Thompson are out. At point guard, Eric Bledsoe's at 7,500 and Quinny Cook's at 5,700. I think both of those guys are usable players and in really good spots to outperform their value. So interested in both guys there. Jennings and Sean Livingston, probably not. Shooting guard, Uncle P, 4,500. With Durant back, his usage drops and his only value is in shot attempts. So at 4,500, Young should be, I think he should be definitely assigned to the DFS scrap heap. While Jason Terry had a interesting 31-point game last time on the back of 5 steals, so that's not going to continue. At 3,800 and 30 minutes per game, maybe. But he's only averaging 13 points over the last 5 in 26 minutes, so it seems unlikely that he's going to be right at that level. Chrissy Middleton's at 78, that also feels just a tad too high. Small forward, Durant's at 10-8, bang, I'm in on that against Milwaukee. That is a nice cheap price for KD, definitely can get behind that. While Yanni at 11-2 is a definite guy to have a look at as well. I do prefer Durant to Antetokounmpo, but both those guys can be used. At power forward, Draymond's at 8,500. He's coming back from an illness. There is an opportunity here for him, but I'd only want to go there for tournaments. While I do like the Muppet John Henson at 5,100, especially with McCurr doubtful. Jabari's at 46. I think you can do better than him. At center, cool. Zaza, Tyler Zeller, and JaVale McGee. Let's leave them alone. On DraftKings, Yanni, Durant, Bledsoe and the Muppet are all nice cash options. Quinn Cook at 6,400 is probably pushing the friendship a little bit too much. I think it's probably a little bit too high there. All right, let's have a look at the other sites. There was an issue with draft stars at this stage. Can't get into their contest. Keep getting errors on their sites. I can't give you those at this point. On Yahoo for tournaments, Punch Bob, David Nwaba, Uncle P, Luke Kennard, Tone Tolliver. Oh, by the way, this is not looking like a good DFS day in general. For tournaments and cash, Drummond, Oladipo, Griffin, Beal, Labissiere, The Muppet, Dwayne Wade, Reggie Jackson, Reggie Bullock, Pat Mills, Noah Vonleh, Frank Mason. That's for Yahoo. And for Moneyball, for tournaments, Beal, Portis, John Wall at 3,700. Crazy. Jim Johnson, Scal Labissiere, Mallow, Noah Vonleh. And for cash, we've got Frankie Mason, Pat Mills, Wade, The Muppet, Josh Richardson, Goran Dragic, Oladipo, Antetokounmpo, and Russell Westbrook. If you are listening to this podcast on Apple Podcasts, 5-star rating and a review is the best way that you can support this show. And you can also find us on Google Play, TuneIn, Stitcher, and Spotify. And of course on YouTube, where I implore you to go give it a thumbs up and subscribe and leave your comments below the video. Check out the rest of the Locked On Podcast Network, LockedOnSports.com, or Locked On NBA Net on Twitter or Facebook. Go and check out all the shows across the NBA, the NFL, and now Major League Baseball, which kicks off tomorrow. Check out Locked On MLB, plus our individual team podcasts, which are going to keep coming as the season goes on. My name's Josh Lloyd. Find me on Twitter at @RedRock_Bball and check out Basketball Monster, where we will have DFS projections all up through the playoffs. So make sure you're checking all of that out as well. We are done here, guys. Thank you so much for listening, everyone. See ya. Future MVP, Kyle Kuzma.